femme-identifying individuals in our community. Objet d'Arc features artwork by female artists, including photographers Amique Fallade, multidisciplinary artist Mickey Aurora, and emerging artists like Kyla James, Simone Sylvan, and DJ Rachel Fay. Tickets are $5 at the door this Thursday, October 13th, at Vancouver Art and Leisure. Did you know you're a notion
girl? Did you know you can... Stressed lately? UBC Yoga Club is here to offer you a peace of mind. Come out to any of our 17 weekly classes running 7 days a week, ranging from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. We have a class to accommodate your needs and abilities. Check us out at ubcyogaclub.com.
Would you like to get updates on your smartphone in an emergency, even if a cell tower is down? It is possible if the FM chip is activated in your phone. Visit freeradioonmyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition.
This is CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus in Vancouver.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are speaking with Leela Sinha. She is a rebellious student of the human brain whose inquisitiveness has led her to become a creative, lively, powerful personality and leadership expert. Her whirlwind of careers has included computer support, parish ministry, woodworking, and body work before landing her in the one-to-one world of coaching. And today, Leela is here to talk about her new book, You're Not Too Much, Intensive Lives in an Expansive World. Welcome to the show, Leela.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. And we have been starting the show with an intention every week. And today, Leela is going to do that. So take it away.
Thank you. So take a breath and close your eyes or open them and focus them on something beautiful in front of you, a spot, a place in your heart. Find that place and settle. And then use that settling as a springboard. Feel yourself fall down and spring up. Open your heart, open your arms, open your life. Make room for the possibility that you can be more than you ever thought you could be. Make room for the possibility that the world is cracking open and spilling messy all over your hands, falling into your mouth. Make room for the possibility that you are grounded and growing. Make room for the possibility that there is more here than you could ever know.
Wow. Thank you. I love that, Leela.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, let's start talking about this book. So what is an intensive? What is an expansive? Where do you like to start to explain what this book is about?
I typically start with where the book started, which is with a back injury. I was lying on my back for 3 months recovering from a spontaneously ruptured disc about a year ago. And actually more like a year and a half ago now. And you do this thing when you have nothing else to do where you sit there and think, and you think about all the happy things and then you run out of happy things and you start thinking about all the things that have gone wrong in your life, or at least I do. And when I started to do that, eventually I noticed a pattern. And the pattern that I was noticing was that all of the times that I had been refused or fired or rejected involved the same phrase, which was, you're too much. And then I noticed that all my best clients and all my closest friends, almost without exception, had had the same problem, had also been told that they were too much. And that had become the rallying cry for all the people who surrounded us, who were trying to get us to change. Because if we would only be a little bit more moderate, a little bit more quiet, a little bit more contained, everything would be fine. So there was a problem in the relationship. It was all our fault. And if we would just mute ourselves a little bit, it would be okay. And I started to realize that we didn't have language in our language. We didn't have words to talk about this quality of too muchness, but that it turned out to be a cluster of characteristics. it wasn't just being intense, and it wasn't just, you know, having a particular kind of work pattern or a particular kind of sleep pattern, or it was all these things that all seemed to show up together. And when all those things showed up together, they created a kind of personality cluster that we didn't have language for. So I started talking about intensiveness, and I made a Facebook post as I was thinking this through, because that's where I think out loud these days. And I got 53 comments. Now, I don't know about you, but my Facebook posts don't usually get 53 comments. And so I realized that I had some. I tried it again. I was like, huh, that's interesting. So I did it again the next day and got 48 comments. And so I started writing about it, thinking that I was just noodling about an idea. And then I realized that if there were intensives, there had to be people at the other end of the spectrum, and those people had to be expansives. I needed a word, so I started pulling from the language we've got. So intensives are people who are intense. We're the ones who work like hell and rest like we're dead. We're the ones who get really into a project and, like, forget to eat until it's over. We're the ones who have really big opinions, and we're either into it or we're not. Like, there's no middle ground about whether we like something or not. And expansives are the ones who like things moderate. They like things, you know, a little bit every day for the whole week, and then they want their weekends off. They prefer their inspiration comes in discrete packets. They prefer things charted out and listed and graphed. And our culture is heavily biased toward that way of functioning. And so it's been this fantastic exploration to find out what happens when you destigmatize intensive behavior. And that's basically what the book is about.
Cool. Well, Lila, I'm curious, what is the difference in, by your definition of intensives and expansives, what's the difference between an intensive and, say, an extrovert, or an expansive and an introvert?
Well, I'm a very introverted intensive. So they're really just completely separate axes. An intensive is someone whose functioning is about being really into stuff. And the way that we move in the world and the way that we interact with people tends to look like a really sharply pitched sine wave. It's up and then it's down, and then it's up and then it's down. If you give an intensive a project that's supposed to last a month, they'll do it in 4 days, usually the first four or the last 4 days of the month, and spend the rest of the time goofing off or skiing in Vail or whatever. An expansive will do that project by setting aside 2 hours a day, every day, for the whole month. So it doesn't really have to do with introversion or extroversion at all. It has to do with the way in which you interact with people, not the way in which you get recharged. Does that make sense?
It does, and that really helps to clarify for me, because when you say we're in an expansive world, when I'm looking at the idea of you're not too much, I'm looking at extroverts and introverts, and we actually live in a world where extroversion is very highly valued.
Yes.
And I do see what you're saying about that expansive, that linear 9 to 5, everything's broken mm-hmm. down in steps. That is also very valued, and it is very difficult being not that way.
Right.
Well, I'm curious, you also have it on your website, but in the book there is a questionnaire. It's mm-hmm. the Intensive Expansive Framework Test. Mm-hmm. And I believe that you said intensives and expansive, it's on a spectrum, correct?
Yes. So there's a 10-point scale, and 5 is in the middle. And you can have a score anywhere along that scale. There's a long assessment and a short assessment available on my website. And there's the paper assessment in the book itself if you don't want to deal with the web scoring.
Perfect. And so can we talk a little bit about that? Because I feel like I'm mildly to moderately intensive. Uh-huh. But I was noticing in those questions, like you talk about, do people say you're too much? Do people get overwhelmed by you? I find that if I'm around someone who's more intensive than I am, mm-hmm. I find that overwhelming.
Sure. So it's about the gap. If I'm a 9 and you're a 7, we're probably okay. If I'm a 9 and you're a 5, that's going to be a struggle. Mm-hmm. But it's also going to be a struggle if I'm an 8 and you're a 4. So the larger the gap, the more points there are between you and the other person, the more likely that you'll have to work to bridge the gap between your intensive and expansive characteristics. So if you, let's say that you're mild to moderately intensive, so let's say that makes you a 6 or a 7, you might still find 10 a little bit of a stretch. You'll have an easier time probably than a 2 would, but sometimes not, because a 2 at least knows absolutely that there's a difference that has to be bridged. Whereas sometimes if you're in that kind of 3-point, 4-point gap, you feel like it ought to be okay, and it's not. And it's harder to see that there's actually something you have to actively work to overcome.
So, Leela, I'm curious about the intensity of, like, when I think of someone who is intensive or someone who might be called too much, mm-hmm. that would be when they're in that balls to the wall, like, go, 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 very intense. But what I'm also getting from you is that people who are intensives are not always at that high energy end of the spectrum. It seems like there's an intense fluctuation. Like you said, you're very strongly going towards a goal, and then when you take a break, it's like the complete opposite. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's absolutely accurate. And that's one of the struggles that we have in work and corporate environments, is that when you interview, you try to be up, right? You try to be in that intensive, producing, engaged, creative flow state when you interview, because that's what you hope they're looking for. And the problem is that you arrive and you're in that state for a while, and then you need a break. And they, because our systems are set up for expansives, they expect you to show up kind of the same way every day all month long. And that's not realistic for an intensive. What they need to expect is that you'll work, you know, 4 consecutive 14-hour days, get the project done, and then not come in for 3 days.
Mm.
And so when you see an intensive in their intensive rest state, they look practically catatonic. They might be the partner who goes into the cave in the basement and plays computer games that make no sense to their partner for 3 days. Or it might be the person who sleeps and watches an entire, you know, binges on an entire series on Netflix. Or somebody who, you know, when I was a child, I used to go to the library and get out a stack of books as long as my arms could hold between my hands and my chin. And I would read them all day Saturday and all day Sunday. That was how I recovered from being in school. So in the rest state, we look very unproductive. Expansives tend to think that we're lazy. We're not lazy. We need the same amount of work and the same amount of rest as expansives do, but we take it in large blocks instead of in small doses.
Hmm. This is really interesting. And you have a section, you have a chapter about mental health
mm-hmm.
and expansives. Can we, or rather intensives, can we talk about the mental health challenges that can come up when you're an intensive living in this expansive world?
Yes. So I'm going to just detour a little tiny bit and talk about fried expansives and squished intensives. So when you grow up in an environment, either way, when you grow up in an environment that tells you that your way of being is wrong, it grates on you and it really taxes you over time. So an intensive becomes squished and keeps trying to be smaller, because what expansives will tell us is that our way of being in the world is hurtful to them. And by and large, intensives really don't want to hurt anybody. We love everybody and we feel really deeply, and we have this vast reservoir of empathy. And so when somebody comes to us and says, you did this thing and you were too big and it hurt me, we think, I don't want to do that. That's terrible. And so we squish and squish and squish, and we try to be smaller, and we try to be less offensive, and we try to be less big emotionally, and sometimes physically too. A lot of times as kids, we're very movement oriented. We tend to flail our arms around a lot. We need a lot of touch. But every time somebody tells us that we're taxing them, we try to squish it down. And by contrast, expansives, who are in an intensive environment, which does happen, although not as often, expansives will actually try to be bigger, and they'll feel like they have to go all the time, because it looks like everybody around them is going all the time, and they don't understand about these deep rest periods. So they just kind of feel like they're never functioning highly enough. And they get fried. They get completely burned out doing that, understandably, because it's not their native mode of function. So when intensives get squished, we often end up self-medicating. We end up looking for ways to deal with this squishing. We become really anxious and really depressed because we feel like we're wrong, because the culture around us and the people around us are telling us that our way of being is wrong and it's bad and it's not as mature and it's not. I mean, there's an incredible amount of coding in our language where people use words like mature, responsible, professional, adult that mean expansive. Like, those words don't have room for intensive in them the way they're usually used in our culture, especially when they're used as a you're not professional enough, you're not mature enough. What they mean is you're not expansive enough. And so when we hear that over and over again, we internalize, especially as children, we internalize it. And it becomes something that overlays our personality and that cages our personality. And so we start to feel really uncomfortable because we're trying to be smaller than we are naturally, and so we end up self-medicating. We end up with anxiety. We're anxious that we're always afraid of doing something wrong. We really like to be right. We really like to get it right. We really like to be in charge. And the more wrong our environment is telling us we are, the more likely that leadership opportunity is going to be taken away from us, that we're going to be told that we have to just be rank and file, that we have to, you know, if we can learn to behave, then maybe we'll be given a little bit of leeway, but not too much. And that just exacerbates the situation. So we become anxious, we become depressed, we start to feel like we're wrong and bad and that we're somehow damaging the people around us just by existing. And then we have to self-medicate eventually, because that's a terrible way to live. And so we often end up going into substance use, or we end up looking for things like, you know, things that are kind of cuspy addictions, like workaholism, or we end up taking exercise kind of to a non-logical extreme. Just anything we can do to burn off some of the adrenaline and the cortisol that we're carrying in our bodies all the time because of this, and to help us ground and feel okay about ourselves for a little while, or at least forget that nobody else thinks that we're okay. And ultimately, that can lead in all kinds of nasty directions.
Well, we are speaking right now with Leela Sinha. She's the author of You're Not Too Much, Intensive Lives in an Expansive World. And Leela, I'm curious, because I do identify more so with the intensive type, but I would say I'm kind of more towards the middle of the spectrum. And what I find is that my natural go, and then burnout, need to rest. Mm-hmm. For me, maybe it's just the judgment that I put on it, but I find that my life functions a little bit better when I don't allow myself to do that so much. Like, what'll happen is when I'm feeling good, I'll take on all of this stuff, and then I'll get overwhelmed, and then I'll feel the need to retreat. And so then I'm like, the pendulum is just swinging to extremes. And so even though that's my natural way of being, I find that when I can reel myself in and be a little more balanced and do smaller things on a regular, consistent basis, I find that it seems like I'm healthier when I do that. How has it been for you?
You know, it's interesting to hear you say that, and I'm a huge proponent of doing whatever works. Mm-hmm. So if you have a system that works for you, I would absolutely not contradict that.
I don't have a system that works. I'm just all over, like, I try to force myself to do the consistent daily habits, and then I do them for a while, and then my energy dips. Mm-hmm. And then years ago, when I would get into that dip, I would give up everything and I would just stop and take a break. And then what would happen is that I would have to rebuild my whole life, because all of the things that I had in place, like my job or say this show, I would have to start again from the beginning when I felt ready and inspired to do it again. So I have maintained those things over time, but I still notice the same pattern of the extremes in energy.
So for me, what made the difference, because I think most of us go through that, where most of us start out knowing intuitively that that's how we work in bursts. And then we are told by the environment we're in that that's wrong, that the right way to do things is a little at a time. And our school systems and our work systems are set up to force us into that. And so we try to do that, but we can't sustain it because we still have to take these rest periods. And now we're wasting a lot of energy, forcing ourselves to go at this snail's pace, which is more tiring. And so what happened for me was that I had to come to a place of deep acceptance. And then I had to plan for the way that I am. So, for example, with something like a podcast, if you want to have regular podcast episodes, because that's how podcasts are usually done, then what you do is you, when you're in the flow, you stack them up, you bank them, you do as many as you can crushed into that 4-day, 5-day period, instead of trying to do, you know, 2 a week every day, every week continuously. And then when you have a down period, that's okay. You've got a bunch banked. You just need to make sure you have another up period before you completely run the bank dry. And when you have judgment about that, for me anyway, when I have judgment about that, then I feel bad the whole time. I feel bad about myself when I'm banking them because I feel like maybe that's the wrong way to do it, or it doesn't count, or it's not as fresh or whatever. And then when I'm using them, I feel like I'm running out a limited resource, and really I should be keeping the banked ones and adding to them. And I can create all these judgmental stories about the right way to do things. But when I just accept that this is how an intensive works, and this is what I do, and this is how I do it, then it feels fine because I know there's an ebb and flow, and I'm working with the ebb and flow.
Well, Lila, how do you know? Because when you're dealing with other people, like, for example, for this radio show, mm-hmm. I also have to work with other people's schedules. So how do you plan for, oh, I'm going to be in a higher energy place and I'll do it all this week? Like, I have no idea. All I know is that a dip is coming. Sooner or later, a dip is coming, and I will come out of it. But I don't seem to know when or how to plan for that. How have you figured that into your life?
For the most part, the way that gets figured into my life has, well, the way that it has gotten figured into my life is experience, like starting to watch it. So first is acceptance, and then is observation. So once I accepted that this is the way I worked, then I started watching myself and looking for clues about when I would be up and when I would be down, and knowing how many things I could do before I was likely to generate a dip for myself. Because the dips typically come as a result of the work phases. So you have a big work phase, and then you have a dip because you burned all your energy and now you need to, like a sea cucumber, crawl under a rock and regenerate all your organs that you just used. And so that up phase generates the down phase. And it's a matter of knowing, for me, it's a matter of knowing how much I can do before I'm likely to need to rest. So I know, for example, that when I work with a client, I have to leave myself a half hour break after that client work before I expect to do anything else. But I also know that I can work with a maximum of 2, maybe 3 clients, and that's an intuition thing when I'm booking people, in a day. I can't do 8 clients or 9 clients in a day. That's completely unrealistic. And if I do 3 days, 2 or 3 days of client work, that's max for a week. And then I have to plan to not do much of any substance for the remaining days of the week. I figured it out by trial and error. I've overbooked myself. I've made mistakes. I've had to cancel or reschedule people. But the result is that I have a much more stable workflow now.
Okay, that makes sense. Because what happens is I look at my calendar and I've balanced it out a little bit every day. Mm-hmm. But then I look at my calendar and I'm like, I don't do like
10 things in a day, I make sure that I don't haven't taken on too much. But then I look and it's like I have no days off.
Right.
Every day I have a responsibility, no matter how I feel.
And that's the problem. Because as an intensive, I need entire days. Like, I don't feel restful. If I know I knew I had this interview and this is evening for me. And so kind of today was an entirely on day because this was coming. And I know that about myself. And so I did a bunch of other administrative and other kinds of work this morning and earlier this afternoon because I knew I was going to be burning the day anyway. I need days that are completely blank slates in order to feel like I'm getting rested and rejuvenated. And so I always book myself empty days. Usually two in a row is required.
That's a good idea. And then what do you do with those empty days? Because if I have an empty day and I haven't done anything, I feel really guilty.
I learned to get over the guilt. And that's part of why the book exists. Because living in an expansive world, we're taught that we should feel guilty for taking a day completely off and just staring at the ceiling or walking on the beach or writing poetry or playing. Right before this interview, I was playing with my poi. I've been learning to spin poi.
Oh, cool.
But I was doing that as a rejuvenating exercise because it was fun and it was something that got me into my body and it was something that got me out on my front lawn instead of in my house. And, you know, learning your own patterns involves starting on a foundation of acceptance and starting on a foundation of, and I know this phrase is completely overused, but really self-love, like loving the way that your body works and loving the way that your brain works. And when I say love, I mean really enjoy it. Like there are some beautiful things that I can do as an intensive that I could not do as an expansive. I can sit down and in two blocks of 2 hours each, write a sermon that I can preach. I couldn't do that as an expansive. That's not how expansive brains work. And so I have learned to be delighted by the things that my brain does because it works the way it does and to appreciate it and to honor it. And that's been a huge amount of internal personal work because the world doesn't support us doing that. But when you take that day off, you can do anything you want. Eat ice cream for breakfast, stare at the ceiling, go for a walk. Don't go for a walk. Decide you're not going to go for a walk because you're feeling rebellious, or decide you're not going to go for a walk because the paint in the corner is calling you and you really want to smear some paint on a canvas even though you have no training. Whatever it is that nourishes you, you have to do that in those down days so that your well is completely full by the time you go into working with clients or interviewing people or doing whatever it is that you have scheduled on your work days.
Okay, so it sounds like what you're saying, Leela, is that in that downtime, you may still be going to a yoga class or doing these things. The difference, though, is that it's not on your schedule. It's not something that you're obligated to do. You're choosing to do it.
Right, and you're choosing to do it in the moment. From that, it's really the base concept of my coaching practice is really about turning toward pleasure and using pleasure as the guiding force. And so if you understand pleasure broadly and you reach down into that place that in me feels like it's just below my solar plexus, you can feel that urge to go one direction or another. And on a day off, I follow that urge wherever it goes.
Okay, just to clarify, so then on an on day when you are scheduled, if you have a different urge, then would you continue on with what's scheduled, or how would you deal with that?
I try to have as little scheduled as possible on my on days. So I might, if I have a client interview, then I show up for the client interview. And I do, if I'm having an internal tug of war about showing up for something like that, I'll do something to reground myself that's quick and easy. Like I'll spin poi for 5 minutes, or I'll do a quick painting, or I'll do something. For me, typically creativity helps me recenter. But that varies for everybody. You know, everybody's got their own thing. Sometimes I'll sing improvisational songs about my clients before I get on the phone with them. but on an on day otherwise, if I had planned to do administrative stuff and then I'm feeling a really strong urge to do a piece of writing, I'll do the writing instead. I'll allow myself to shuffle my schedule around, because that's another piece of being an intensive, is that when the muse calls, we have to answer. And if we don't, we'll lose the thing, and we know we'll lose the thing, and then we'll be fretting about losing the thing the whole time. So unless I have a commitment with another human being, everything else is loosely scheduled. Like, I think I'm going to do administrative here, and I think I'm going to do something else there. But if I wake up in the morning and what's up for me is a piece of writing, then I'll do the writing first. And then my brain will be clear, and I'll be able to do the rest of what I need to do. The other thing that's really useful is a concept that Charlie Gilkey, who's a coach, calls heat mapping, where you look at your day, and you look at your week, and you look at your month, and you figure out when you're most productive. And I actually, he may even expand it to year, I do. So knowing what your most productive seasons are, what your most productive time of day is, knowing what your most productive time of the week is really helpful for beginning to formulate which days you might want to take off and which days you might want to be working and what you might want to do in those days.
So Lila, it almost sounds like if you want to be if you're an intensive and you want to be at your best and in the flow with what works for you, it almost sounds like you really have to be self-employed.
Well, that's an interesting question, isn't it? I recently did a little bit of a book tour a couple months ago. I did a little bit of a book tour through Michigan and a couple of stops in Canada. And when I was in Grand Rapids, one of the people who came to my talk said, oh, I've been using this with my employees and it's great. She works in a corporation, and she has she had realized that the corporation had kind of two kinds of work, and they were expecting everyone to do all the kinds of work. But one of the kinds of work was R&D type work, and it was very ebb and flow. It was very spontaneous. It was very creative. It was really demanding when it was demanding, and then when it wasn't, it really wasn't. And then the other one was kind of maintenance and accounting type work, where everything was very regular and very even. And she looked at her staff and actually split them up without knowing this framework or any of this work that I had done. She looked at her staff and split them up into intensives and expansives, and sent the intensives off to do the R&D and the expansives off to do the maintenance work, and everybody was so much happier. So it's not that you have to be self-employed, but you do have to find a work environment that works for you. And we tend to be self-employed, and we tend to be entrepreneurs because we don't particularly like authority. And we do tend to have really strong senses of what we need and really want our needs to get met accurately and exactly. And in order to make that happen, often it's best if we're in charge and if there aren't that many other people that we're working with. And so entrepreneurship and founding companies are things that really work for us. But they're not the only way. You can be an intensive in an environment like a commercial kitchen. That's an intensive environment. Or you can be an intensive on, you know, the stock market, trading on the stock floor. That's an intensive environment. Or you can be an intensive, a lot of the corporate consulting gigs with the big consulting companies have a very intensive quality. You know, you're on, you're on, you're on, and then you're off, and then you're on. Emergency room doctors. There are a bunch of careers which allow that kind of ebb and flow. And you do have to tweak a little bit. You know, if somebody's dying on the table and you're on duty, you can't be like, I'm having an off day, sorry. But there are definitely careers that mesh better with intensive work patterns and work habits, and ones that don't. And then there are managers that mesh better with intensives and managers that don't. And so one of the things that I'm really looking forward to is getting to talk with people who are in corporate environments, who are dealing with a mix of intensives and expansives, who are writing job descriptions. Because if you write a job description that's half intensive and half expansive, somebody's going to be really stressed out because they're going to be faking half of it.
I had an interview the other day. The ad was, we're looking for someone who's the life of the party. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's me. Great. I applied. They brought me in immediately for an interview.
Fabulous.
95% of the job was sitting in front of the computer.
Right. So that's a classic problem. So I've been reading job descriptions, and one of my partners recently said, you know, you spend an awful lot of time yelling at your job descriptions. And I'm like, well, I'm reading them because I'm curious to see whether they're hiring intensives or expansives. And I've noticed that almost every job description has mix that's not compatible. It's not like they're sort of close. It's they're at opposite ends of the spectrum. And so what they're going to get is somebody who can fake one and who does the other natively. And at some point, the faking is going to stop. They're going to run out of energy. They're going to have a bad day. And we revert to our native functioning when we're stressed. And they're going to lose half of that function. It would be so much better if people would look at the job description and split it and make sure they're hiring intensives to do intensive things and expensives to do expensive things.
And so is that part of your mission now with the book, You're Not Too Much, Intensive Lives in an Expansive World, to change the way that people look at their expectations of themselves as well as employees?
Absolutely. That's exactly what I want. I want people to read this book and see themselves or their partners or their employees or their bosses and understand what's happening and have language for what's happening and then use it to make it better. So I want to see companies using intensiveness and expansiveness as concepts when they're writing a job description so that they know what they're trying to hire. And I want to see managers looking at their staffs and saying, okay, so we have this person who's in an expansive and we want to promote them. We are not promoting them into an intensive role because that'll make everyone miserable. Mm. And we're not going to promote them into an intensive department either. You know, this person wants to grow, the next available position is in another department and they're technically qualified, but that other department is an intensive department and this person's an expensive. That's a bad idea. Let's not do that.
Well, Lila, one of the things that I made a note earlier when we were talking about self-employment, because I feel like I'm one of those people who is very drawn to entrepreneurship because I do have somewhat of a leadership personality and I have the high energy when I have it.
Right.
And then when I don't, I don't. But I notice that a lot of these people who are teaching entrepreneurs, they're expansives and they're teaching people who are intensives, they're saying you should be expansive. If you want to be successful in business or as an entrepreneur, you have to do it this way. So has that been your experience or how do you respond to that?
That's an interesting observation. My observation has actually been that the online world, at least, of entrepreneurs is very heavily intensives. We tend to believe that everyone has a passion. Expansives don't always have a passion. It's okay. It's actually fine. Not everybody needs to have a passion, and we as intensives need to really stand down on that. And so my experience has been that it's intensives who have been taught that expansiveness is the way to teach people. And so they're taking their intensive experience and they're trying to generalize it to the point where they can teach it as an expansive system. And it doesn't work, because what made their career successful, what made these teachers careers successful, is their intensiveness and is their spontaneity and is the fact that we work from the gut and we're highly risk tolerant and we're highly chaos tolerant. And you can't teach that in a course. You can't actually sell that. That's not how that works. And so we have a lot of people trying to teach people to do the things that they did. But in fact, if you look at a lot of the entrepreneurs who have a regular blog post, they don't write them once a week. They write them 10 at a time, and then they auto-post them. Mm-hmm. You know, people talk about social media management, things like Hootsuite, that can be used to send tweets on a schedule because we're told that we need to show up regularly and visibly. And the way to do that is to, you know, tweet every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Well, we lose something when we try to automate that. And yet it's not, for most of us as entrepreneurs, that's not how we function. We don't do things at 5 p.m. We're the people who get up at 4 a.m. because we had an inspiration. We spend 4 hours writing furiously. And then we have to go to sleep because it was 4 a.m. when we got up. We're the ones who have trouble getting our kids off to school because we're in the middle of a thought. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's again a sign of the cultural bias toward expansiveness imposing itself on intensives who have actually found a kind of a niche where we can function. And then the culture says to us, well, you have to be consistent. And my solution has been to say, I'm just going to work with intensives. And I'm upfront. You know, my Patreon, I don't think I've posted anything to my Patreon for 2 months, but I have it priced per thing, so it doesn't matter. And when I have something to say, I will say it, but I'm not going to subject people to random drivel just because I feel like I should.
Oh, I'm so glad that we're speaking, because I feel like this is going to help so many people. I'm already having all these thoughts of, you mentioned the heat mapping. I'm going to Google that, because it sounds like that's really important, is to observe the overall pattern of where our energy and inspiration tends to lie, so that we at least have an idea of... I feel like if I knew in advance that, okay, I've been working for 4 days, really high energy or high intensity, now I know that I'm going to have a couple of low days.
Mm-hmm.
And preparing for that and allowing and accepting that, rather than as soon as I, even with all the work that I've been doing on myself over the years, I notice that every time I get into a low period, I worry.
Mm-hmm.
I worry that something's wrong, even though I know from experience that I will come out of it, and worrying just makes it worse. I still right. tend to do it.
Yeah. And we do it in relationships too. As intensives, we're looking at our relationships and we think, oh my God, you know, they haven't talked to me in 5 minutes. What's wrong? and we really just need to let it go. And knowing that we go through this ebb and flow, knowing that that's our pattern, allows us to work with it, allows us to make space with it. You know, Charlie Gilkey's, it's funny because I think, I haven't talked to Charlie about this, but I think Charlie's an expansive. But his heat mapping is super useful for intensives, because we're the people that don't know what's coming and get blindsided by ourselves until we start to see the patterns. And it's the same in our relationships. It's the same in our workspaces. It's the same everywhere.
Well, there's so much information here, Lila.
we didn't even touch on the racism stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, the reason that the expansive bias exists can be traced back to British colonialism. And then it became insidiously interwoven with our understanding of race in this country. And so and that was a whole section of the book that I didn't know I was going to write when I started writing, but it turned out to be really important. So there's a ton here.
Wow. Well, how long, as an intensive, how long did it take you to write the book?
First Facebook post to holding the book in my hands was about 18 months.
Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that you did that in bursts rather than what we're told to do, is write a little bit every day.
I did most of it in bursts. And then I got to a place, I had a separate situation that required a minor surgery, and I was on my back again for a month. And fortunately, I had a rig that would allow me to type while lying flat on my back. And so I realized that I don't remember exactly, 30,000 words from being done with the book. I set a word count goal. And most of it I wrote in bursts whenever I felt like it, whenever the spirit moved me. And then that last section, I knew. So intensives have a thing that I call the 80% problem, which is that we get 80% through a project and we're really interested. And then we can see that it could be finished. We could see how it could be finished. And we know that we could finish it. And that's where we lose interest. We're like, I'm done. Puzzle solved. And so we wander away from 80% completed things all the time. And so I knew if I wanted to complete the book, by that time I had written the section about 80% problems. And so I knew if I wanted to complete the book, I had to do something to move myself through it. And so that last section, I actually wrote by waking up. I wake up spontaneously around 6 most days. I would wake up and I would write for an hour. I made a commitment to write for an hour every morning before I did anything except pee. I didn't even put my contacts in. And I didn't have to write about any particular topic. I could write anything I wanted as long as it was related to the book. I left as many doors open as I could. And I said, you know, my goal for the hour is 1,000 words, but whatever comes out, comes out. And at the end of the hour, I'm released, unless I'm really in the flow, in which case I'll keep writing. So that's how I actually finished the book with an expansive strategy, even though the entire rest of the book had been written intensively.
Okay, I'm glad that we're talking about this, because that's the thing for me, is I would do the 80% complete and then not complete, and then that leaves us unfulfilled in life. It leaves us as, like, I would imagine that a lot of intensives feel like this. We're overachieving underachievers because we don't complete enough things.
Well, we don't complete things that don't hold our interest in an extraordinary way. And we have so much to offer the world. But for us, the problem is solved when we can see that it could be solved. And for the world, you know, if I don't get to the point where the paper book is sitting in my hands, I haven't actually solved the problem. And so it's a matter of figuring out what for you, what accountability, what support, what structures work for you to get you through that last 20%. And that's often one of the many places where expansives are really helpful in our lives. So when people read this book, often they're like, well, what do you have against expansives? I have nothing against expansives. We're two different kinds of people. Intensives light the fires and expansives tend them. And if we don't have both, we are in trouble. And it's funny because our storytelling traditions valorize the intensives, right? If you look at the heroes of all of the heroes' journeys, they're intensives. They're these outlier people who break all the rules and go off and do these really crazy things and do things that nobody else in their culture is telling them to do. That, you know, the Tolkien books are a classic in that regard. And yet, without the steady, expansive characters, the story is not possible. And so and those narratives are the only place in our culture where as intensives we see ourselves reflected as the good guys. We also typically see ourselves reflected as the bad guys. Like, usually the hero and the villain are both intensives. Mm-hmm. But when we see ourselves reflected at all, we glom onto it because it's so rare for us to see ourselves represented. But what's missing from that is that we're there. You know, the hero is in the hero's seat because they've got, you know, Samwise Gamgee behind them. You know, Frodo Baggins couldn't get that ring to the mountain if he didn't have Samwise Gamgee, who keeps saying, I don't know, this seems like a bad idea. Can't we go home? I'd really like to have 11sies. And yet, Samwise goes with Frodo the whole way. So we need both. And we have to be mindful as intensives that when we do get to be the hero, when we do get to be the kind of highly visible front of the room person, that we need to really be mindful and appreciative of the people who aren't in the front of the room, who make it possible for us to be there. And that's a weird flip for us, because we spend so much time fighting for a place in our culture at all, fighting to be recognized, fighting to be allowed to be who we are, that when we finally get to a place where we're allowed, we're like, yes! And it's really hard for us sometimes to remember in that moment of triumph that the people who are usually dominant, that we perceive as powerful all the time around us, who are always telling us that we're wrong, those same people are the people who are really supporting us and allowing us, making the space and holding the space for us to be that shining, inspirational example. And so people, when they read my book, they're like, well, yeah, I'm an expansive. This doesn't feel very nice. And I say, well, I've decentered expansiveness. This is a case of dominant culture being decentered, and I know it feels uncomfortable. And there's a reason for it, because the rest of the culture is built for you. But when we do get to be ourselves, and when as intensives we really do get to take up that much space, it's important for us then to remember that the expansives are doing a hell of a lot of work to make us a space up there.
Beautifully said, Leela. So we are talking with Leela Sinha. She is the author of You're Not Too Much, Intensive Lives in an Expansive World. And we just have a few minutes left in the show. There is so much in this book that we could discuss. I'm wondering, what do you think the biggest point, or what would you like to leave our audience with today?
I think the most important point, I'd like to think that the point's going to evolve, but right now the most important thing people can take out of this book is that intensiveness is a real, beautiful, legitimate way to be in the world. And if you are an intensive, you belong just the way you are, and it's okay to create a life that makes space for that. It's important for you to create a life that makes space for that, or your gifts are going to get lost.
Thank you, Lila. And so you mentioned in your coaching that you do work with intensives, rather. Is that part of what you do, is help intensives figure out how to navigate their lives?
Yes. So the heart of my work is almost always that I help intensives create a life that celebrates and uses their intensity as an asset instead of a liability. And that could be in relationships, it could be in career, it could be in anything.
Beautiful. I'm just wondering if this book would even have come to be without that time spent without, because I know for myself, even though my energy comes in bursts, I tend to always be busy doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to force myself to take time to do nothing. Like you even said, on the weekends when you were a kid, you would spend all that time reading books. But how much time did you spend actually doing nothing in your recovery time?
I ended up not being, it was when I was recovering, I knew that I wouldn't lie still. Mm-hmm. If I didn't have something to do. And that's how I ended up with the keyboard under my fingers. And that's how the book came to be. And you're right. I have no idea whether this book would ever have existed if I hadn't ruptured my L3 disc.
So, Lila, I'm curious, there's so much I want to ask you, and we've got to wrap it up in a few minutes. But so do you find that you have to force yourself to, there is a section on meditation, mm-hmm, for intensive. So maybe we can end with that, because that's what I'm really curious about, is how do you force yourself to not be constantly go, 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 because we do need to rest.
I don't force myself to do anything. If the word force myself is involved, then I'm doing it wrong. What happens is when you start to pay attention to that pleasure compass inside you, when you start to pay attention to that directional, that internal sense of direction, which becomes possible when you start accepting who you are and you start making space for who you are, then that sensation of goodness rises up. When I first started doing this work, I didn't know what it felt like to be relaxed and grounded and okay, because I never made space for myself to do the things I needed to do to get to that state. So once I was able to get to that state and recognize that state, then I started looking for what would generate that state. And that's when you start to realize, okay, I've worked, here comes the ebb. And when you feel the ebb coming, you just go with it. You don't fight it. You make space for it.
Oh, I wish we could talk about this all day. but I guess we should wrap it up. It has been such a pleasure speaking with you, Lila. Lila Sinha is the author of You're Not Too Much, Intensive Lives in an Expansive World. If people want to get the book or they want to do coaching with you, what's the best way to get in touch?
The website for the book is yournottoomuch.com. And the website includes 5 interviews that I did, video interviews, and a couple of audio pieces, and in addition to the assessments that I mentioned earlier, and contact information. People should feel free to find me on Facebook and ping me. I'm always glad to connect with people there, and I do an enormous amount of outreach on Facebook or Twitter. Twitter is fine too. My Twitter handle is Lila Sinha, no spaces. And I'm happy to hear people's feedback. If people are interested in engaging this work in a more academic way, I'm happy to have those conversations as well.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for your time, Lila. This has been Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we have been speaking with Lila Sinha, the author of You're Not Too Much, Intensive Lives in an Expansive World. And I hope that this has really served you, whether you're in an intensive or you're an expansive and you know some intensives. Thank you so much for listening. And if you felt value in this interview, please do share it. And I want
to understand more about fashion. We asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism, as opposed to someone who buys, like you know, let's say, you know, someone buys a
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
MRG Conscious presents Flock of Dimes this Friday, October 21st at the Cobalt. Show begins at 7 p.m. Touring in support of the new album, If You See Me, Say Yes, on Prestige Records, Jen Wassner of Y Oak explores the atmospheric side of pop with Flock of Dimes. Find tickets online at mrgconcerts.com. This October 21st, Flock of Dimes at the Cobalt.
Every year, the Vancouver International Film Festival brings a revelry of cinephilia to Vancouver. This year, VIF features over 300 films airing between September 29th and October 14th, with an opening gala featuring Isling Walsh's Maudie and a closing gala featuring Terrence Malick's Voyage of Time.
Billions of years in the making.
For its 35th year, VIF will be expanding the frame, emphasizing social interaction, workshops, and audience feedback. Find the complete program for this year's VIF online at viff.org. Experience VIF 2016, this September 29th to October 14th.
It's the biggest musical competition in the country.
CITR is hosting our 33rd annual Shindig. It's a battle of the bands at Pat's Pub every Tuesday night.
We've curated 27 delicious local bands to compete for the title.
Who will take the crown from last year's winners late spring? Come to find out. Fun fact, at this year's Shindig, there'll be fun facts for beers.
Oh, and jokes too.
Thanks to this year's sponsors, AMS Events, Backline Musician Services, Canadian Music Week, Discorder Magazine, Vader Master Studios, Four Winds Brewery, Rain City Records, Mint Records, Music Waste, Nimbus Recording, Thunderbird Radio Hell, Six Cent Press, Silver Fox Postering, Minuteman Press, Band Merch Canada, Blue Light Studios, and Zulu Records.
Come out to see Shindig this week, October 18th, to see Pavel, Future Star, and Wind Up Birds.
Good night, Shindig is everywhere, and remember, no matter what anyone says, rock on!
It's about time, the UBC hockey season opener. Tune in this week as your defending Canada West women's hockey champions take on the Saskatchewan Huskies. Listen live on CITR 101.9 FM this Friday at 7 p.m. or online at CITR.ca.
Yeah. either you've been troubled, you've been broke, you've been hungry, no job, no money. The one you love has deserted you. That makes you blue.
Got the blues? Just want to hear some blues? Tune in every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5 for Code Blue.